And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking.
Nothing can prevent me from lapping you.
Oh, geez. You know what? Don't tempt me.
Continuing the conversation we already had going.
You got to sleep sometime. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast. The one voted most likely to succeed on 6 of the 7 continents. He's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering. You can find him on the web at le-suspension.com.
Number 54.
Number 54. And I'm Michael Gugis. You can find my writings. I've been doing a little scribbling lately at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. I'm going through a World Superbike in review 2015. Figure out where things went wrong and where things went right. And it's been interesting. It's been a lot of fun to talk about this stuff. Ed, do you think we're going to make it through this episode of Motorbike Road Racing? I'm sorry, of Deep Thinking without crapping on one of our listeners?
No.
Nope. Absolutely not going to happen.
Yeah, I got something for all of them and you.
So I show up. Hey, I show up voluntarily for the abuse. Knowing when I walk away that I'm still better than you are as a human
what
being.
What am I supposed to do with all these checks you've been writing for me to checks. Me if this is voluntary?
When do I write checks?
Hey, so I got the December 2015 Road Racing World issue
right
here in my hands.
Indeed, Road Racing World, the finest magazine ever written in the history of magazines.
Another issue chock full of really thoughtful stuff.
Yep, really cool stuff.
But
yes,
this issue demonstrates something that's been a long ongoing and little noticed hilarity,
which
I'm going to read to you. If you turn to the editor, letter to the editor page of all of these issues.
Wait, is this anything like the busload of cheerleaders broke down in front of my house?
No.
Oh, damn. Okay.
You'll have to tell me that joke later.
That's not a joke.
So on the letters to the editor page, on the bottom, there's a little gray box that tells you to send your letters, blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it contains the funniest sentence in English history.
I know the sentence.
I'm going to read it to you. Published letters are the personal opinion of the author and do not necessarily reflect the official position of this publication. It's actually more than one sentence. I lied.
Okay.
All letters may be edited for clarity and length. Delusional letters, here we go, delusional letters from raving lunatics, conspiracy theorists, professional victims, or others with a tenuous grasp on reality may or may not be published, depending upon their apparent entertainment value as judged by the editor. And the editor is John Ulrich, folks.
Right,
so
right.
Those of you who think he's a straight-faced, no-nonsense guy,
wait.
You just got to look a little deeper. The guy is a genius. He missed his calling as a stand-up comedian.
Oh, my
he
God.
He could have
right?
totally rocked it. And the reason I'm reading this now is because the all-time delusional letter is in the December 2015 issue.
Just read the headline, okay? Because we don't have time to get into the whole thing.
There's I didn't even see that before. The title written for this letter is, "This is why we have a letters page disclaimer."
And generally it goes on about how England started World War II.
With the help of France.
With the help of France,
and attacking Germany. Yeah,
it's just
anyway,
insane.
Anyway, you got to read it.
You go ahead and talk. I want to look at something. Keep going. Keep going.
So, again, another endorsement of Road Racing World. And sadly, the person writing the letter is an American citizen. Really, folks, this is why you should not sleep in the back of class when you're in seventh grade. As penalties for you later on. Man, I bet you that guy's going to vote for Trump. Okay, so let's see. Michael is now checking out the magazine, which, by the way, you can get online and in paper, real print.
Where's the? I wrote the. If there's a.
I thought he was looking for. No, he's just looking for stuff that he wrote so he can read it again. You can go on Google and type in your name.
No.
See
if there's a jump to the letters page. There's another disclaimer than that one I wrote.
Yeah, he's gone back to this one.
No, that's the first one.
So anyway,
the second one says, "Hey, it's the rules for engagement," and I wrote that one. It's equally hysterical.
Good.
But anyway, go on.
So
motorcycles. We're here to talk about motorcycles.
Well, and all associated stuff, which pretty much gets us to any topic we want, right?
That's what separates us from other motorcycle road racing podcasts.
Yeah, they try to just talk about motorcycles
exactly.
only.
Completely insane.
Yeah.
Right?
I did a class report in sixth grade on Pluto, the planet. It was a planet back then. And so recently, right, we had all the big fupa because they demoted Pluto to a planetoid.
Is that a word?
It is. Listen, if that chick who ran for vice president can make up words, so can I.
Okay, let's go with it.
Yeah.
Econotig.
Anyway, yeah, that's my welder. NASA sent a probe to Pluto.
Okay.
And the pictures coming back are just mind-boggling.
Okay.
And the biggest surprise, of course, is that even though Pluto is so far away from the sun that it's probably like looking at a weak flashlight from Pluto, there's enough energy to get dynamic things going on.
Yeah.
You know, there's mountains and oceans. It's all of ice, of course.
Right.
But, man, the pictures are spectacular.
Well, you know what picture I thought was really the most amazing?
The one where it looks like the Pluto, the character, the dog
no,
is...
No, no, not that one. The one with the little alien holding up the sign that says, "We are so a planet."
Yeah.
You know? Oh, boy. What are we going to talk about? Motorcycles.
Well, you sent me an email with a whole bunch of stuff.
I did.
So, oh, we were talking about gas tanks.
Yeah, let's talk about the Yamaha MotoGP bike.
The 2016 Yamaha MotoGP bike currently has the filler neck in the passenger seat location.
And at least a few liters. Lynn Jarvis says
can I finish my sentence?
No. He says they need more.
So
they need more capacity.
The 2015.
Because they're carrying 2 more liters.
Well, that, yeah, okay.
So that's
the 2015 model has the gas tank basically below the seat.
Right.
So the filler neck is in the normal spot, and then most of the gas is going down, convoluted, however it's crazy shaped.
Look, as close to the center of mass as you can.
They're trying to centralize all the mass.
Right.
Okay. And the thing to remember, of course, about a fuel tank is that the mass goes away during the duration of the race.
Right.
So it's not as critical to get fueled in close to the center as it is to get other things like a battery or the engine itself,
that
mass remains the same through the whole race.
You still want it to be relatively close,
you
though.
You do, but if you could get the rider lower, the rider doesn't get lighter as the race goes on.
We're going to talk about that.
So, and also note that we're saying center of mass. We're not trying to say as low as possible.
Right.
You want to get everything in the center so it's pivoting in the middle of itself.
Right.
So for the 2016 model currently, the filler is at the back where the passenger would be, and the gas is flowing down to the same basic location from the back. But then also the fuel tank is longer and goes back there, and Michael just pointed out probably part of the reason is that because they can now run 2 more liters of fuel,
they
need
space
for that because they didn't have a tank. For sure, they didn't make the tank bigger than they needed, and that's running around with nothing in it, right?
Yeah, and it's not like they have a whole bunch of extra space on a MotoGP
bike.
One
of the things that this will address is that previously, when you have some of the fuel up in the normal location,
mm-hmm.
now the tank is full at the beginning of the race, that fuel is higher, mm-hmm. so the bike is heavier. Nothing you can do about that.
Right.
But the fuel is higher,
right.
and it has more of an effect on the pitch of the bike when the rider's braking. Okay, so if you move that fuel that has to be high anyway to the back, it's going to have less effect on the pitch. Now, it will have some effect on weight transfer to the rear.
And that's one of the things.
And so that's why you build the bike in Sended. They had that bike at the race in Japan.
That's why you go send it
with
to test.
With a wild card guy.
Right.
You find out what happens.
And one of the things that Jarvis says is that it's also something that they're looking at doing to adapt to the Michelin tires, because the Michelin rear rocks.
Right.
The front has issues.
So I would say that they probably have a main reason for doing whatever they do.
And then series
and
of
then, you know, they want to have some smoke and some mirrors, and they come, oh, and it'll help us.
Right.
It may very well help with mm-hmm. the tire issue, but I doubt that was on their plan initially, right?
Speaking of weight transfer,
yes.
I was out running several months ago.
Okay.
It was at night.
So you're transferring weight into the atmosphere.
It was
breathing out.
It was wet.
Yes.
Okay, so the street was wet. I'm running in the street. This, trust me, this has to do with motorcycles, okay? So the front door at a house.
6 degrees of separation. Everything front,
is has
connected
to do with
to
motorcycles.
Everything.
The front door of a house opens up and 2 dogs come charging out at me. Okay, one of them's mid-sized, one of them is like very, very low and compact, tiny little legs, okay? And they're both running as fast as they can, they come, arr! So I've learned in those circumstances, I put aside my fear, put aside the survival responses, and I duck down. I get down to dog level.
So you can get a good face looking.
And I start aggressively talking to them in very positive tones. Who's a good puppy? Who's a good puppy? Okay, now both of the dogs realize that this situation has now changed into something they weren't expecting, right? The taller of the two dogs manages to brace himself on his legs, him or herself on his legs, and manages to stop in plenty of time. Okay, okay. And,
he's got anti-lock.
Right, comes to a halt a few feet away and stands there and wags, right? But the low dog with no legs and no leverage, it was great, realizes this situation has spiraled out of control, tries to backpedal, but he's too low to the ground, and it's just nothing but skidding, dog frantically trying to go the other way, this whole center of mass just shoving him towards me, and he comes to a halt right at my feet, and I start petting him. He's like, ah! Anyway.
All part of his master plan.
Right. Which reminds me.
Cuteness wins all.
Cuteness wins all. What's his face? Wayne Gardner used to like to set up his bikes really low, with all the weight really low.
And really low compared to something.
Right.
Not necessarily really low.
Right. Well, but the point is that he couldn't get the thing to turn. He could not change direction on it. He could get it to break, but he could not get the thing to turn. And when, who was his teammate after Doohan? Doohan joined the team after, while Gardner was still there. Doohan's bike was set up differently, and Doohan could get the thing to turn. Whereas, and Lawson too.
So when you raise or lower your bike relative to the height that it has now,
right?
You know, you're changing lots of stuff.
Right.
The biggest thing that you're changing is how much leverage the mass has on the suspension. So a taller bike is going to pitch more forward and back when you brake or accelerate.
Right.
And a shorter bike is going to do less of that. A shorter bike is going to have an advantage when you need to change direction from one way all the way to the other quickly.
Okay.
Okay, because it doesn't have to go up as high to come back down, right? When you're leaned to the left, your mass is lower than when you're straight up and down. So in order to get over to the right. You got to go up first.
Okay.
So the shorter the bike is, the quicker it can make that transition. However, you lose all this feel when you take away the forward and back pitching.
Because you
and when you take away feel from a rider, of course,
you've tried this. I remember
so
talking about this.
So one of the other advantages of a shorter bike is it's a smaller hole in the air.
Right.
Right. You're just if you walk standing upright and then you hunch down, you're not affecting all the air that's above your head.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to have a greater top speed. Yada yada. This is why drag racing bikes are short. This is why land speed record bikes are torpedoes.
Exactly.
Okay. So we tried it. We were at Willow Springs, and we just shortened the front and the back of the bike.
Which bike was it?
TZ250.
Okay.
A real bike, dude. If you want to do science, you got to have a good base.
Jeez.
But
Let me get my feet up off the floor.
Whatever advantage in top speed the bike may have gained from aerodynamic efficiency was lost in less drive because of less swing arm angle.
Okay.
Right? Less rider feel with the less pitching. Right? Mm-hmm. Less ground clearance, which wasn't really an issue on a TZ, you know.
But on a production bike, it would be an issue.
It's not a production bike. It's a TZ.
I know. I'm saying on a production bike.
Maybe. And then the other part, of course, is, you know, I had, you know, years and years and years of riding the bike the way it was. And we make a change, and we ride it for a session, and then we went slower. It didn't feel as good. Well, okay, screw that. It's not right.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if I kept riding and we kept working on it. But you'd have to be able to, at minimum, be able to change the swing arm pivot location to get the swing arm angle back, to get the drive, you know. So that's the kind of thing that you do in your chassis development stage of designing the bike.
Right.
Once you've got that, trying to lower the bike a quarter of an inch for aerodynamic, its advantage is not going to be worth
pointless.
You know, what you give up. Yeah, you're better off to come up with other aerodynamic devices like winglets, and vortex generators, and you're going to get more out of it.
I know John had mentioned that he once commissioned a frame from a famous frame builder, and the crankshaft was an inch lower than it was in the stock bike, so the thing was unrideable. Absolutely unrideable.
That depends. You can't just go, it's an inch lower than the stock bike. I mean, you can say that, but it doesn't mean anything. You need to know the relationship of the crankshaft and the swing arm pivot, which generally on all bikes nowadays, it's on the same plane. When the bike is level, and moving the crank, you know, away from that, things are gonna be all funky.
Yep. All right, where are we on time? How are we doing on top?
We're halfway.
Halfway through?
Oh. No, we're more than halfway.
Do we have
15 minutes?
Okay, so cool. Do you have something that you have to talk about, or can we talk about Moto 2 for this?
Oh no, I can. We can talk about anything. Okay. I mean, and you want to talk about Moto 2 because you've decided, looked at the evidence, and concluded that it supports your theory.
Absolutely, my theory, and I want to point out, this is big preaching.
Correlation does not equal causation, folks.
I didn't say causation. All I'm saying was that I was able to identify the phenomenon before other people did. As a matter of fact, I wrote about this on my blog back. I looked it up because I wanted to quantify.
You wanted to quantify your genius.
I wanted to quantify my genius.
Yes.
Thank you so
the
much.
The very definition of a genius is someone who pays attention to himself and makes to prove
genius,
that he's a genius.
Narcissist,
yeah,
you know.
So.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other. Hey, you buttered your bread. Now you have to lay in it. The where was I? Right. August of 2014, I said the problem, I wrote a blog post called The Problem with Identibike Racing, and that's the problem with it. It's with the spec engine, you can only do so much as far as motor goes. You have spec transmission, you have spec gearing, a whole bunch of other spec stuff in the class. And what's happened is that, rather obviously, it's got no manufacturer interest whatsoever. So the teams just look at each other, figure out who's going fastest, and then go buy the stuff that's going fastest. So now we're down to basically three chassis manufacturers instead of 14. We had 14 over the history of Moto 2. We had like 11 the first season. Now we're down to three. One of them, Kalex, has something like 7/8 of the field. Suter just dropped out and said, we're not doing it anymore. And it's not only the predictable end of how this was going to go, but the problem is that the racing now stinks.
Okay.
Because you've eliminated variables.
So when you told me about this, I said, yeah, okay, fine.
Right.
But you can't make this statement without a solution. And
I
you
have
said
a
you got the solution to
Absolutely.
See you. What's the solution? We'll back up just a little bit and we'll remind folks that what Moto 2 replaced was 250 GP,
right,
where we were down to one manufacturer.
Well, two, basically.
Honda wasn't competing anymore. Honda was building bikes that people could buy, but only KTM was developing.
Yeah, really.
And so, you know, that model of letting the manufacturers do what the hell they want,
well,
that didn't work.
It didn't work because nobody was interested in building 250s anymore. Nobody was interested
okay,
in
so
strokes,
your solution to
sad.
The now problem is...
Okay, you're speccing the wrong thing.
You're speccing the wrong thing.
Yeah,
you got to spec dick size.
You know, then it comes down to ability, and now I've got to have a line of women at my door,
women in,
you know,
right, exactly.
it's
okay.
just ridiculous.
What are you going to spec?
Chassis, brakes, and suspension. And you can do
so
that.
So you just want to say instead of having open frames, you can have open engines.
Yeah, absolutely.
How are you not going to get the same problem that you have now? One team is going to develop the best engine and everybody's going to buy it.
Who builds frames? Who frame builders?
Lots of frame builders.
Yeah, but they don't have any money.
Okay.
Who builds motors? Manufacturers.
Motor okay.
Manufacturers have a lot of money to spend on motors.
Okay.
If you spec the chassis, and I've talked about this in a different context before, but if you spec the chassis in Moto 2, I don't care who it is, Kalex, Suter, you know, whoever, Billy Joe Bob's, you know, Ethnic Hair Care Products and GP Frames Incorporated, right? You spec that. You tell Ohlins, you build these forks, this shock for the bike.
Yeah, we get it. You spec the
right?
chassis.
And then you let anybody bolt in a 600cc 4, a 675 triple, or an 800 twin.
Okay.
Now you've got a series where you actually have some manufacturer interest because they can talk about how much better their bike is or their motor is. You can allow them to do some...
We can see some merit here.
Yeah, yeah.
What prevented MotoGP from doing that in the first place? Surely they considered this and they chose a spec engine instead.
Because when they came up with... when they
Wasn't it because they wanted to support an aftermarket? Lots of people can build frames.
No. If
they build a spec engine, a chassis,
right,
then only Honda, Yamaha, Kawasaki, and Suzuki,
and
KTM.
And Triumph, and MV Agusta, and, I mean, there's eight potential motor sources here.
Okay, well, I mean, clearly what they got is not working as well as we'd like it to, so maybe this could make it better. Why don't they just have a Moto 2 class? Why can't it be open engine, open chassis? Everything.
Well, and that's a great question. Because when they came up with it, we were in the middle of a worldwide economic downturn.
Mm-hmm.
The 250 bikes were $1 million to lease.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And nobody, and very few people could afford it.
Well, and those bikes were not relevant to bikes for sale. So that's what I see as the big thing. Two strokes are not relevant to the market. So
you've got
to get rid of them.
Crazy expensive bikes that no manufacturer is interested in.
Yep.
So they came up with a really cheap class. Honda
said
here.
So let's have crazy expensive bikes that the manufacturers are interested in.
Well,
think about this.
But they won't be crazy expensive, though.
Okay. But let's say, well, they won't be compared to MotoGP bikes, but they can still be crazy expensive.
Well, they'll be.
Would Kawasaki enter a factory Moto2 effort?
They could. That's the point.
Well, my question is, would they? Well, right, because my point is they won't come into MotoGP
because it's way too expensive.
But maybe they would come into Moto2.
Exactly, well, Suzuki.
Okay, folks, you heard it first here.
Right.
If it happens, even 30 years from now,
we'll take full credit for it and demand royalties.
2 minute board.
Go ahead.
Well, our royalties are cheap, as you know.
Exactly.
Hickory Farms.
Hickory Farms and a piece of crap Aprilia bike that we can work on.
2 minute board.
Go ahead.
Jack Miller moving to a new team in MotoGP for 2016.
Right. He has to.
Okay.
Honda gave him a contract.
When you see Jack Miller succeed in the MotoGP level,
right?
And there's lots of definition of success.
Check the
You don't have to be an alien to beat the aliens to succeed.
Yeah.
Okay.
You gotta get paid.
Well, exactly. Okay. Well, in that manner, he's probably already succeeding. But anyway, when you see him doing much, much better,
right?
Then go take your MotoGP pass and start watching races, and you will see whenever they show it that he is no longer wheeling out of the pits to go the start of practice. Because this year, the majority of the time, he's like a two-year-old wheeling out of the pits. You never see Rossi, Lorenzo, any of the aliens. They have a job to do, and wheeling out of the pits is not part of that job. And so I'm telling you that when you see him succeeding, he will have first stopped bullshitting around. He will have gotten serious.
I'll be honest with you. That's part of the joy of watching guys like Pedrosa do their jobs. You know, it's because it's a job, and it's like watching a professional do their job.
Well, you understand that to appreciate the subtlety of guys who ride like Pedrosa and Lorenzo requires more understanding, more intelligent of the viewer.
It's
right.
Yeah.
Anybody can go, wow, Kevin Schwantz was spectacular.
And he was.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
But watch him walk in the pits now, right? He's all fucked up from all his crashing.
Right?
And Kevin was a fantastic rider, and he was a world champion, and he is a nice human being. But if you want to see a guy who's really, really good at it, you watch the guy who's not spectacular.
You know,
the guy who's mastering the
and wins.
Nobody wins multiple world championships falling off their bikes.
And we're going to talk about this just very briefly before we end this one, because I mentioned this on
the phone. It was my 2 minute board.
I know. We're going to extend
it.
We're good. No, we're just
stealing airtime.
Sudden death.
People want to stop listening already.
No,
they are at their destination, waiting in the driveway for us to be done talking.
And but you know what?
Go on.
What could possibly be better than listening
to you?
They can completely wait. No, we. And we can do this briefly, but we talked about it on the phone. The thing I was just reflecting back on 2015 and admiring Lorenzo and his whole attitude and his ability to handle pressure at that last race. Absolutely perfect from the time.
We talked about this, and so Michael is like blown away by the amount of pressure
thinking about it.
On him,
just
right? And how he did a good job. But my point was that situation made it easier for him. Right? Because when the only thing you need to do is just go win the race, right? Now, notice we said just win a MotoGP race.
No.
But it was
more than that.
No, there's more pressure when second place might be good enough for the way Lorenzo works.
And I get all that.
Right? Yeah.
But the thing that I liked was it wasn't just you have to go out and win the race. He was perfect from the time he went out on the first session on Friday. His qualifying lap.
Well, he's been doing that all year.
Perfect.
Dude, his qualifying lap redefined. They're going to write a new word for perfect. It's going to be a level above perfect.
But
it's mind blowing.
And the thing that got me thinking about it was his launch. Absolutely, once again, exactly what needed to be done.
Yep. No, that's
perfect.
That's the guy.
It's that second that can, you know, when you look back in history at road racing and racing in all types, there are seconds like that in people's career. 1 second periods that make or break. their whole careers. And this was
But don't get the idea, folks, that you just got to do it perfect one second.
But
it's a lot of work to get to.
Yeah,
but
you have to so, do it perfectly in all of those seconds.
We agree.
And that was
the whole season was full of events like that.
Right.
That the more we think about them, the more impressed
you just admire
by them.
It.
Yeah, it's mind blowing.
He's
Michael Gugis.
He's Ed Sorbo.
Aloha.